Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the GDP Podcast. I'm Griffin Della Penna. I do apologize that we didn't have an episode last week, and that was one of the things that I mentioned in week one, that there is a lot of flexibility. In some weeks, there might be two episodes. I had a lot going on this past week, also trying to build this off the ground floor, managing schedules of potential guests, which now I feel like I have a pretty good list of potential guests, and now trying to fill this next couple of weeks, months, and continue to have this podcast have at least one episode a week. So certainly be on the lookout for more episodes to come. Here in this week for episode three, we have Rich Hollenberg on with me, as he has been another great mentor of mine in the sports broadcasting realm. He is currently a play-by-play voice for Big 12 basketball on ESPN and also the studio host for the Tampa Bay Rays local and regional broadcast. And how I initially got to know him was through something called the Break-In and Breakthrough Sportscasting Training Program, which has been such a huge success since it started 4 years ago. And I was at the beginning of that, towards the beginning few cohorts. So our relationship has certainly blossomed. He has been there for me every step of the way. And a lot of what he taught me in that initial cohort were things that I have used in my career all the way through, as that was my junior year at Canisius. So certainly have came a long way. He has an amazing perspective. We talk about his own career, his determination to have his lifelong dreams come to fruition, and then also kind of pitching why, if you're a sportscaster and thinking about taking that next step in your career, why Break-In and Breakthrough is perfect for you. So without further ado, here's Rich Hollenberg, here with a very, very special guest, somebody who's become a dear friend over the last couple of years. He can be heard on ESPN as a play-by-play voice with college basketball season coming up. He's an Emmy Award-winning studio host for the Tampa Bay Rays and also the founder of the Break-In and Breakthrough Sportscasting Training Program. Rich Hollenberg, thank you for being here today.
GDP, it is my honor and pleasure to be joining you.
So we just kind of talked a little bit before. You have a little bit of an update as well. College basketball season coming up here shortly. What's been going on since the MLB season ended for you?
Well, you know, we work in a very capricious industry, to use an SAT word. Things change all the time. I'm closing in on two decades working with ESPN, and you never know when your number's up. There's a lot of talented up-and-coming sportscasters, yourself included in that mix. But I'm proud and honored to say that I just re-signed with ESPN for another multi-year deal. So whether you like it or not, I'm back calling college hoops again for at least another couple of years.
Well, we love to hear, and still kind of sticking in the Big 12 mix moving forward.
Things are, you know, things are always in flux. There's fairly frequently some management shuffling that goes on at the worldwide leader. And when new people come on board, they have their own ideas. I've covered the Big 12 for the last decade plus. I would be more than thrilled to stay in there, but sometimes change is good. And you know this as well as anybody, Griffin. One of the things that I try to live by, and I certainly try to practice what I preach, is you got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And if they ask me, do you want to do some other conferences, or we'd like to try you in another conference? My answer is going to be yes. Bring it on. I love the new challenge. Every year in college basketball is going to be different anyway, with NIL and transfer portal now.
Yeah, it's a great place to start. I just wanted to, again, congratulate you on that before we kind of go through your evolution and how you've gotten to this point in your career. So let's go all the way back when this journey really started for you. When did you maybe realize at a younger age that, hey, this is the career that I kind of want to go down?
Well, I don't know if career would be the word I would choose, because I was probably very similar to you, Griff. I was so young when I dreamed of becoming a sportscaster. I never thought of it as a career at that point as a 13-year-old. But I realized that I wanted to be connected to sports, and I loved television. And the easy nexus of those two things was to become a sportscaster. And I was very fortunate. I went to a summer camp in the Poconos area in Pennsylvania, and one of my head counselors was directly connected to the Syracuse basketball program. That, coupled with the fact that right down the road in Honesdale, Pennsylvania, was the famous five-star basketball camp, where at that point, all the blue-chip prospects coming out of high school would go there, and all the elite college players and coaches would go there to coach and run clinics for those high school blue-chippers. And my head counselor, Gary Barnaba, who, you know, has been a longtime associate of the Syracuse basketball program, knew that I was a big basketball fan. I was a big sports fan. And he would bring people from Syracuse back to our camp from Five Star to run clinics. And he knew how much I loved TV. And he said, you know, you love Marv Albert and you love Bob Costas. You know what those two dudes have in common? And I said, what? And he said, they both went to Syracuse. And I said, sign me up. And I was a one-track mind as a 13-year-old all the way through high school with my sights set on one thing and one thing only. And that was going to the same school that at that time my two idols, Bob and Marv, attended. And I was fortunate enough to get that opportunity and that experience. And I guess, as they say, the rest is history after that.
So then when you step foot on campus as a freshman, how were you really able to just take that entire experience and make the most of it? Because when you get on campus, as I knew, again, as a grad student, a little bit different scenario, that it's very competitive and you need to kind of start very early, especially as an undergrad, to be able to, when you're a junior and a senior, be able to call games on the radio or TV. So how did you really approach that in your own experience?
Yeah, you know, Griffin, I always operated, even at that young, inexperienced age, I knew my parents were investing a significant amount for me to chase a dream, and a dream that not a lot of people get to fulfill or realize. But they said, if this is what you want to do, we back you 100%. And that is the greatest gift that my parents could have ever given me. So I showed up on campus not knowing a thing about what it would take to make it in the business. The only thing I knew was I had zero plan B. I did not have a safety net. Now, sure, I could have changed majors and I could have gone from broadcast journalism in Newhouse to something, you know, in public relations or finance or business, but I operated without a safety net. I said, I'm either going to make this or I am going to crash and burn wildly. And I learned really quickly from day one in my Comm 101 class with Professor Mason that I looked around the room and I saw exactly what I was going to need to do to not only make it, but just to survive at Newhouse. And then I started to very slowly, just by osmosis, find out from people talking, oh, there's WAER and there's WJPZ. And at the time, it was called UUTV when I was at Syracuse a million years ago. Now it's Citrus TV. And I said, okay, I got to get involved with something. So I pledged a fraternity first semester of my freshman year. So I was swamped with that. But I always promised myself, I am going to excel in my Newhouse classes. The other classes might fall by the wayside and suffer a little bit, but I'm always going to make sure that I excel in my Newhouse classes. And I did. And that was my whole focus my freshman year. Then sophomore year came around and I was like, I don't know if I could say this on your podcast, but I was like, it was my oh shit moment. I said, all my Newhouse colleagues are doing other things in addition to excelling in their classes. So how do I stand out? So I immediately signed up for WAER and I immediately got put on that track of wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, trudge to the studio, rip copy, read it. It doesn't even go on the air. You just get sound checks and older students grade you. And hopefully by the time you're a junior, you get cleared to go on the air in some way, shape, or form. I was way too dumb and way too impatient to deal with that, plus the early mornings, plus the terrible weather. So after one semester, I left WAER with the idea that, hey, I don't really want to be a play-by-play guy anyway. I want to be on SportsCenter. So AER might not be my path. I basically rationalized and justified my laziness. But I did get involved with JPZ and I did get involved with UUTV. And it was there that I discovered my passion for sportscasting and the fact that there are others around you who not only you could be inspired by and motivated by, but learn from. And that obviously laid the groundwork for what I do now. And the one thing I realized, even though I didn't realize that I realized it back then, Griffin, because I'm a firm believer in when you're just starting out, you don't know what you don't know. And I certainly didn't know what I'm about to say, but I learned it very quickly. There's value in versatility. And I felt coming out of college that I didn't excel as a reporter or as an anchor or as a radio host or certainly as a play-by-play because I didn't chase that at all. But what I felt like is that I was good at everything. So where does that leave me? And what it left me with was a ton of self-doubt. I'm a jack of all trades, but a master of none. And it really fed into my imposter syndrome, which everybody feels at some point to some degree. I felt that like everybody else. And then I met Al Michaels years later, and Al was the one who told me this. And now I share this with everybody who I speak with. There is value in versatility. If you want to specialize in something, go for it. Focus on it, hone in on it, spend most of your time on it. But now in this day and age, with the bandwidth of sports casting and broadcasting in general, so much wider than it's ever been, it is looked upon as a major benefit if you can do multiple things well. And I felt like I had that skill set coming out of college, thanks to Newhouse, but I thought that was going to hurt me and not help me. And what I found out as my career progressed was it was certainly more of an aid than it was a detriment.
I think one of the great parts that you touched on was that self-doubt. You're in one of the most prestigious programs in the country that is known for being able to, hey, here are all of these different options, make the most of it. And you certainly did in all of those different stops. Try to bring me back to, if you can remember, post-graduation, how you were navigating that time with, again, that self-doubt. Am I going to be setting myself up in a good position? And how can I take my career goal and what I'm now about to embark on and try to get to that point?
Yeah, it's a great question, Griffin, because this is where we all start to realize if we allow ourselves, we're all swimming in the same pool, right? We all suffer from these same negative emotions, whether it's fear or anxiety or doubt. I group them all into the same thinking process. And when I got out of college, I thought that I was doing everything in my power to move onward and upward in my career. I don't know if you would call it belief, because like I said, I was riddled with self-doubt and hesitation and uncertainty. But I said, I just got to do the blocking and tackling. You have to start somewhere. So there, and this is shows you how old I am, a million years ago, there used to be a book, a broadcasting and cable book, and it almost looked like a phone book. And it listed every single broadcast affiliate television station in the country. And at that point, there were 200, I might be making this number up, but something in the neighborhood of 211 markets. And I, on my typewriter or my word processor, I banged out a form letter and I said, I'm going to send this letter to 100 television stations. And to me, that felt like a ton of work. Like, man, I'm going above and beyond. I'm kicking ass by doing this. So I said, I'm not going to start with 1 to 100 because that's unrealistic. So I started with 101 and went up. And I sent all these letters out, literally like typed them out, licked the envelope, stamped it, sent it off in the U.S. Post Office. And I might have gotten a handful of responses back. And out of that handful of responses, 99.9% of them were, thanks for sending this. We are not interested at the time, but keep in touch or will be in touch if something comes along. And I said, okay, they're not interested in me. Next. And what I know now is the value of networking. I thought I was networking by doing that, but I was really only doing the first step, which is reaching out. The real benefit of networking is not getting in touch, it's staying in touch. So you could learn a lot from those negative responses that are coming your way. I didn't take advantage of a single one of them. I said, oh, fail, move on to the next market. Another fail, move on to the next market. And it wasn't failing. It was just narrowing the field, learning from the mistakes. What can I do better? What should I be doing differently? And then moving on from there with armed with that knowledge. Instead, I just started piecing together opportunities. I was moved back home. I was coaching tennis to make some money so I could eventually move out on my own. And then a job. I was also in my defense with all these epic failures that I was exposed to. There was one company that I started working for, and it was called Sportsbone. This, again, sounds so ancient, like it's from the Stone Age. Doesn't exist anymore, but in the tri-state area, there was a company, what I now know is for glorified gamblers. It was for gambling degenerates. That doesn't exist anymore because everything is so normalized with sports gambling, FanDuel and DraftKings and all that. But at that point, the only thing that existed for gamblers was Sportsbone. And the jingle that was on TV commercials was, for all your sports news instantly, dial 976-1313. And I forget how I got that job interview, but I interviewed for the job and I got it. And it was in Elmont, New York. And another thing that I tell a lot of aspiring sportscasters is you have to be willing to literally and figuratively go the extra mile if you really want to make it. And for me, I had to drive an hour and a half to and from that job, just to have that job. And I took it because I knew it was in sports. It wasn't on television, it wasn't on radio, but it was in sports. And literally, I would sit in a room with a bunch of other dudes, a big bank of TVs, and every 10 minutes, we would go in a cycle, enter a code in our phone system, and give all the sports updates. So I was a sportscaster in the most generous sense of the word. That I was able to parlay into becoming essentially a glorified stringer for Sportsbone. It was like called, you know, exclusive content. So if you were a big New Jersey Nets fan, I spoke directly to New Jersey Nets fans who subscribed to that. But I got a media press pass and I was a credentialed media member in the NBA covering the New Jersey Nets. So I was able to do that, put that on my resume, but that wasn't enough to allow me to move out of my house. Luckily, a friend of mine from high school worked at the Associated Press in New York City. I got an interview for that job, and I took that job. Not in sports, not in television, not in radio, but it was journalism. And I am a big proponent of keeping your journalistic tools, your writing skills, as sharp as possible. So again, I took that step, even though it was somewhat of a sideways step. It was lateral. I wasn't moving up the sportscasting mountain for sure, But I said, at least this gives me enough of a salary that I can move out of my house. And that's a win. So I did that. And I was still sending out my demo reel whenever an opportunity came along. And then fortunately, 8 months later, I got a call from a Syracuse professor who has since passed, the late, great Bob Lissett, who was my one networking victory. He was the one professor I kept in touch with. He was the one professor who I leaned on as a mentor and really bonded with. And he called me and said, one of your classmates is a reporter at a TV station in Great Falls, Montana. Their sports anchor just left. Would you be interested in taking that job? And of course, I said yes, out of hand. Didn't know anything about Great Falls, not the market size, not what the job requirements were. But I sent them my resume and my tape. I got an interview over the phone. And bang, 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 I got the job offer. And later that October, I was moving out to Great Falls, Montana, market 172. It was one of the smallest markets in the country, but I finally got my shot. And like I said earlier, I operated without a plan B. So this was plan A and my only plan, my first opportunity to get on camera. And that led to a domino effect of me kind of subconsciously realizing what I did and what I needed to repeat, the steps I needed to repeat these successes that I was having. One of them was keeping in touch with the right people. The other one was never giving up and always continuing to learn and grow, even as you are trying your best to kick ass at your current job. And that job led to another job down here in the Tampa Bay area 6 months after that. And that's when I first started freelancing for ESPN. And then years after that, got the Tampa Bay Rays gig. And here we are today.
That's just what I love about your story, is taking that leap of faith, again, in an area where, is it technically being on camera, being a sports broadcaster? It has those similarities, but it's not the same thing, right? And you're still embarking on that goal. You then take a leap of faith to move across the country to a place you've never been to go to Montana, and then that trickle-down effect from there. And something that we've talked about, and a lot of people do, is your first job is the hardest one to get. And then after that, everything else will take care of itself. How did you see that progression, again, from being in Montana to 6 months later going to Tampa? Those are two very different places. How did you really see that go into fruition?
You know what? I had blinders on. I mean, my very first sportscast, Griffin, the first weekend I was on the air in Great Falls at KFBB, that Monday morning, I was packaging up a demo reel to send out because I had new stuff to share with people. I was gainfully employed in the sportscasting industry, and I was terrible. I mean, I was awful. And I still was sending stuff out. So I was, I guess you could call it, blissfully ignorant at that point. I said, okay, market 172. Now maybe I could get inside 150 with my next job. And after I get inside 150, then I shoot for inside 100. But I really had no game plan to doing that. And like I said, 6 months later, I probably wasn't qualified for this sports director job that I got, but I was flown in for the interview, and it was another Newhouse Mafia type of an opportunity. Someone at Newhouse was leaving that job and called the school, and Professor Lissett heard that call and said, I got someone, and called me. And I got that job interview not knowing the first thing about calling play-by-play, but I had to do play-by-play. And the best thing about that job, and this really comes full circle to what we were talking about earlier, Griff, which is the value and versatility. I faked it till I made it. I mean, when I got that job interview, I had no idea what the job was. Then I found out when I got down here that I was going to be doing play-by-play on Friday nights for high school sports, for arena football, for indoor soccer, for pro volleyball, you name it. We did everything. But I was also going to host produce, edit, and write my own sports talk show. In addition to that, I was going to be hosting a call-in show. These are all things I had never done before. But they asked me, are you able to do this? Yes, of course I'm able to do it. Fake it till I make it. And yeah, somewhere in there, there's a grain or two of deep-seated belief in yourself. You got to have that. And I think we all do. And so that coupled with the finger on the panic button of, if I don't succeed, I am crashing and burning spectacularly. So I cannot hit that button. And I just, I learned as I went, and I had a good support system. And I was young. I was 25 years old. No one was judging me on how successful I was right then. I was good enough at the time. And I got better every time I was on the air, and I got more comfortable every time I was on the air. So, you know, being blissfully ignorant could be just that, blissful, when you really don't know what you don't know. And I learned very quickly that I love doing play-by-play, and maybe that was something I could pursue because I'd never tried it before. I loved live television. That was something I hadn't done in my previous job at KFBB. All of these things, but a lot of it still goes back to Syracuse. I don't want this to sound like an ad campaign for Newhouse. It's more of a love letter than it is anything, because I had to fall back on skills that I learned in my classes, writing, editing, reporting, all of those things I used in great extent, especially in those first two jobs I had, first at KFBB in Great Falls, and then at Time Warner Channel 7 in the Tampa Bay area, because I was juggling a lot of plates. And, you know, if it was a bigger, the market was big, but the station was small. If it was a bigger station, I probably would have been shown the door after a few months. I probably wouldn't have even been hired, to be honest with you. But because that job was a cable station, they were able to take a chance on a young, inexperienced kid like myself. And I got to prove myself while I was going through that process.
And if the listeners haven't gotten the idea yet, you are certainly a grinder, and you've, after that job, stayed down in the Tampa area. And that job is a great microcosm at Channel 7 of what you've been able to do now, where you've had that reporting experience and that ability to now be a studio host in the major leagues and also still do play-by-play. When you're now down after there, when Channel 7 is happening, what were the next steps to, again, continue to elevate, not just in the Tampa market, but then even on the national level when NFL Network starts to become a possibility?
Yeah, well, the biggest step before NFL Network came along was the fact that, and again, this was never calculated, Griffin. It was all almost like a happy accident for me. But I was covering a ton of high school sports down here. And my favorite show on ESPN, which sadly doesn't exist anymore, was Scholastic Sports America. You're too young to know SSA. But the very first host of Scholastic Sports America, which focused on, they called it the Stars of Tomorrow Today. And the very first host of that show was Chris Fowler. And I used to watch that show religiously. And I'm covering high school sports going, I'm watching these shows on ESPN, and some of the stories that I'm doing and some of the athletes that I'm talking to could be on this show. So I made a couple of blind phone calls, found out that ESPN didn't actually produce that show. It was subcontracted to a production company out of Indianapolis. And I got the number of that company. And I said, I'm the sports director of a cable station here in Tampa Bay. We've got some amazing athletes and amazing stories. How do you get these stories for Scholastic Sports America? They said, send them to us. If we air them, we'll pay you $200. And so every story I did for my cable channel in Tampa, I sent to SSA. And that began a year and a half string of my first exposure on ESPN. And I was a pig in shit. I thought that was it. I made it. This is the big time. Only to realize that that was only one step along the way. That opened the door for me to get other jobs with ESPN that were subcontracted out. So I was hosting BMX dirt bike racing on ESPN2 when ESPN2 was brand new. Dirt bike jumping, which was something new. One of my very first things that I hosted on ESPN was the National Jump Rope Championships. All of these things were on the air, not produced by ESPN directly out of Bristol, but subcontracted out. And that was a brand new experience for me. I didn't even know that that entity existed. So I found a way in through kind of the side door to ESPN to getting exposure on ESPN that I didn't even know existed. And then a year or so later, I was able to lose or leave that cable channel job because I was doing so much freelance work for ESPN that I was making more money working on the weekends than I was during the week. So I was focused on that. And then once again, it's not necessarily just what you know, it's who you know. I had a good friend from high school who had taken a job at this brand new entity called NFL Network. And he called me and he said, "Are you living in the Tampa area?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, we just started NFL Network. I'm a producer here. We might need someone in your area to cover those teams, like in the NFC South." And I said, "Great, I'll do it." And I'll never forget, Griffin, my very first opportunity to do this was not because they coveted my NFL knowledge or my reporting skills. I was easy fodder for them. I was in the right place at the right time. There was a hurricane coming toward Florida. This is 20 years ago. There was a hurricane coming toward Florida, and the Dolphins game was going to be severely impacted. So Eric Weinberger, who then went on to literally run NFL Network Productions, and now he's in charge of Believe Podcasting, called me up and he said, "We need you to get to Miami. Can you?" And because I was a freelancer, I could do whatever I wanted. And I was like, "Sure, I'll go." And you talk about faking it till you make it. I got on the air. I was doing a stand-up on the field. There was no football to be talked about. It was really all about this hurricane that was bearing down on the Sunshine State. That was my first exposure to NFL Network. And I worked for NFL Network for 10 years as a correspondent. And one of the biggest things that I ever did still to this day in my broadcasting career was born out of that. I was the correspondent on site for the entire Aaron Hernandez murder case. I was the first reporter on the air nationally when he got brought out of his house in handcuffs and officially charged with murder. And I followed that case all the way through the court dates in Falls River, Massachusetts. So one thing always leads to the next for me. And as I'm recounting these stories, it makes me realize one of, if not the biggest common thread that ties them all together is relationships. It's the relationships that you have, the relationships that you build, and the relationships that you maintain that will come back and pay dividends for you. And it certainly has for me.
Yeah. And it's great seeing that progression in your own career. And we certainly will be talking about the break in and breakthrough cohort and how that's played a factor in my life in just a minute. But before we get into that, the entire purpose of networking is a large part of that program. Was there maybe a moment that you realized where it clicked for you? Because you mentioned early on in your career where you just didn't really understand it yet. But as you're going through some of these experiences that, wow, if I continue to really garner these relationships and not just use them to my advantage in the moment, but also continue to talk to these people over time, that it's only going to benefit me. Do you remember a time where maybe that light flitch kind of switched on for you in terms of networking and relationships?
You know what? I think that flame always flickered, but it was in the back of my mind. I was really wary of people using the term, "It's not what you know, it's who you know." And I know I used that in our conversation already. I thought that was always the biggest negative. it was worse than nepotism. It's not what you know, it's who you know. It's like, so what did I go to Newhouse for? What am I working my ass off grinding for if what I know isn't going to get me where I need to be, but it's who I know? That's like a handout. And I didn't want to be, you know, a pity case. I didn't want to be looked at as, you know, someone who got a job because someone said, oh, you got to hire that kid because I'm friends with his dad or something like that. Now I realize I've kind of flipped the meaning of that in my head. And I try to instill this in the up and coming sportscasters who I mentor. It's not what you know, it's who you know, doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It means it's a good thing. You have to have a base of knowledge and talent. But alongside that, you have to also have the relationships. My parents are so proud of me because they're like, oh, you did this all by yourself. You didn't go into your dad's business and you didn't get any handouts from anybody. But really, no one does it by themselves. I certainly didn't. I've already mentioned a few names. Bob Lissett, Eric Weinberger. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of people who have helped me along the way, pushed me, supported me. I stand on their shoulders. It's an endless list of people who I have leaned on through the years for advice, for consultation, a shoulder to cry on. And my parents are included in that group, but they have nothing to do with sportscasting. Inside the sportscasting world, there are so many people who, in some small degree or some large degree, are responsible for me getting to whatever level of success I've been able to attain. And when I learned that, I was able to embrace that. And that was, you have to humble yourself and not look at it as, oh, people are going to give me the stink eye because I got this job because I was friends with Eric Weinberger. That's the only reason I'm reporting for NFL Network. No, I got the opportunity. The best ability is availability. And I was available, but what did you do with that opportunity? And I kicked ass. At least I did well enough to get another callback and a callback after that and build on top of that. So those are the moments, you know, the phone calls from my professor, taking that phone call from a high school friend years later and leaving myself open to those opportunities. Just saying yes to all of those opportunities, whether it was lateral, upwards, backwards, sideways, slantways, whatever way it was. I just wanted to keep working, keep pushing that rock up the hill, and eventually I'm going to hit a fulcrum point and it's going to start rolling downhill instead of constantly pushing it uphill for me. And you know what, Griffin? I still don't feel like I'm going downhill yet. I still feel like I am working my ass off to prove myself because, like you said earlier, I'm a grinder. So the idea of networking and its importance has always been in me somewhere, somehow. It just took real examples in my life and my career to make me more aware of how valuable those experiences are.
We've continued to see your career progress to where you currently are at as kind of climb the ladder at ESPN to do play-by-play at the highest level. And then also with your job with the Tampa Bay Rays and being a studio host all season long. And you've, again, been doing this for a long time now. When did maybe that light or flicker during that time begin where you thought, hey, I have this idea to help give back to the next generation of sportscasters? Where did that come from, and why did you decide to go do that when you already have so much going on in your own professional career?
It's a great question. And the easy answer to that, Griff, is COVID. I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan. He very oftentimes in concerts has sung, not a song that he wrote, but an old gospel song. And the title of the song is "From Small Things, Big Things Come." And I always hearken back to that song and those lyrics for what helped the genesis of what is now Breakin' and Breakthrough. I was sitting here in my office during COVID doing a whole lot of nothing, which is what we were all doing, no matter how old or young we were at the time. But I had a bunch of college students reaching out to me saying, hey, you know, would you mind looking at my demo reel? Would you mind looking at my resume? Would you mind getting on a phone call so we could talk about the business? And I had nothing but time on my hands. So I was like, sure. And going back years before that, I remember being in a hotel room covering, I believe it was dirt bike racing for ESPN2 at the time. And I was in Louisville, Kentucky, and I was watching College Game Day, which at that point, Coach Lou Holtz was part of. And he was going on and on. He was like a pastor on a pulpit talking about, you got to have goals in life and you've got to write them down. Everybody right now should write down a list of 100 things they want to accomplish in their lives. And then you could go out and I was motivated watching this in my hotel room. And I wrote down as many as I could. And one of the things I wrote down was, I want to teach. Now, in my mind, I thought that meant when my career is over, I'm going to retire and then maybe I'll move up to Syracuse and get a job as an adjunct professor on the Hill at Newhouse. But I never considered it before that. And then COVID came along and I was telling my best friend from Syracuse how much I enjoyed interacting with these younger people who are as passionate about sportscasting as I am. And he said, you sound like you are lit up inside. You can make a business out of this. And I was like, ah, who do you kid? You know, again, imposter syndrome. My first thought was, who the hell gives a shit about what I have to say about this business? And he's like, Rich, you've been in this business for 20 years. You've made all the mistakes. You've had success. They want to hear how you did that so that they could use that in their careers. So reluctantly, and really only because it meant an excuse to hang out with my best friend, we started hammering out the framework of what very quickly became the program tenets of Breakin' and Breakthrough. And they're founded on a lot of what we've talked about. Networking is one of them. Becoming the best version of yourself on the air is another one. And then critical feedback is the third one. And that has to do specifically with our demo reels, because our demo reels are our number one calling card in this business. If you don't have an excellent demo reel that is truly representative of how good you are as a sportscaster, you could be the nicest guy, you could be the most talented girl, but you're not going to get the job opportunities until people see your demo reel and you knock their socks off with it. So those three things were kind of the tent poles, if you will, of Breakin' and Breakthrough. And it was a great diversion for me while I wasn't working on the air and calling games and working, you know, Major League Baseball shows. And it's just, it's been a grassroots sentiment from day one. And now I'm literally 2 months away from completing my fourth year and we're closing in on 250 alumni. And it is easily become what I consider to be, when I'm long gone from this earth, this will be my legacy. Not any game that I called for ESPN, not any team that I covered, not any story that I broke for NFL Network or MLB Network. It's going to be the people, the community that I helped create in Breakin' and Breakthrough that will outlast me long after I'm gone. So it's given me as much as hopefully it's given the people who have come through the program.
That just gives me so much joy, even hearing that and knowing that I was kind of near the ground floor of that. Some of your first few cohorts, and throughout this interview, I've had flashbacks of our initial conversations. And that was really at the beginning of my career and my junior year at Canisius. I'm starting to do games for the first time. And I vividly remember a conversation that we had. And not that I was pushing it off, but I thought to myself, oh, well, I'm not ready for that yet. I just kind of started. Maybe I'm going to continue to get reps my senior year and I'll join the cohort later. And I vividly remember you telling me is there is no better time for you to do this now so you can gain this experience, learn this knowledge that then you can apply for the rest of your career. And I really do thank you for that, because I do think that a large part of that program has gotten me to the point that I'm at now. So that's kind of my experience with the program. And I know that there's now almost 250 of those other same stories. Just how have you seen the program evolve from, again, my cohort very early on to where Breaking and Breakthrough is at now?
Well, first of all, you are a shining example, Griffin. And I've said that to you off camera of what I look for in someone I recruit to be part of this family. It's more than a community. It's a family at its best. And that is, you have to have talent. Like, I'm not going to reach out to you if you're a hack. I'm just being honest. I like to cherry pick. So you have to have a certain modicum of talent. That kind of goes without saying. But what's equally as important to me is you have to have passion to match that talent. And if you have that, I can work with you. I know I have enough confidence because of the track record that we've had over the last 4 years that I can make you or help you to become the best that you could be as a sportscaster. So the biggest change really was I went into this 4 years ago thinking I'm going to load these kids up with as much information and knowledge about sportscasting as I possibly can. And then it's up to them. Well, the it's up to them part is still relevant because, and I say this at the end of every cohort, and you know this, there is nothing I could tell you or advise you on or teach you or share with you that is going to be more important than you going out and doing it, acting on it. So reps is the most important thing. I'm not so lost in the context of this cohort that I can misrepresent how valuable it is. But what I've learned from this community is just as valuable to them as the sportscasting knowledge and advice I could share is the knowledge between the shoulders up here, the mental skills that we all have to deal with on a regular basis, and confidence or lack thereof, fear of failure, uncertainty about your place in not only this industry, but this world, all of these things, the doubts and the fears that are so evident and ready to attack. I mean, they're knocking at our door every single day. They're peeking in our window, knocking on that window pane, just waiting for you to open that window or open that door crack so they could get in. And when they get in, it's really hard to get rid of them. I always liken it to the angel and the devil on your shoulders. And one guy is saying, you can do this. Trust yourself. Go with your gut. Just say yes. And the other one's going, you don't have a prayer. Look at how few people get to do what you're trying to do. Who do you think you are that you're so special that you're going to be able to do this? That's the imposter. That's imposter syndrome. And I suffer from it, and you suffer from it, and everyone suffers from it. So I have learned, and I continue to learn, how to advise people on how to mitigate all that, because all of it's noise, and it all comes from within. So you can teach yourself, and you can be coached on how to maybe not eliminate it. Maybe that would be too much of an ask, but you can certainly minimize it and marginalize it and mitigate it. I love my alliteration, so that it is not a profound impact on your career and your life. And so in some ways, I've gone down a path that most people would think is gobbledygook. You know, Tony Robbins and Mel Robbins and all of those people, Gary Vee, I'm not likening myself to those people, but I am a student of those people now, just like I'm a student of sportscasting. As a matter of fact, and I shared this with you once, but there's a book that I'm reading or I read called The Confident Mind. This is the kind of literature that I'm into as much as Holding Court by Dick Vitale, these are the books that I keep right at my arm's length so that when I have another flight to take, I look around, I say, if I don't have a new book, I could always reach for one of these. And Shaka Smart was the one who gave me the Confident Mind book, because I marvel when I talk to coaches how they have to be advocates and armchair psychologists and those type of people as much as they have to coach the X's and O's of basketball. So I liken myself to those guys, or at least I aspire to be like the Shaka Smarts of the world. I want to be your sportscasting coach, but I also want to be your mentor in life. And that's the biggest shift over the last 4 years. It started as hyper-focused on sportscasting, but very quickly morphed into this balance of sportscasting and what the mental skills are needed to succeed in this business.
Yeah. And I think that is such a powerful part of the program that can't be stated enough of how great that is for people who are in my position now, who are just starting out or have been in the business for 10 years. That mental side of things certainly is much more evident than I think we really give it credit for. As we wrap up here, I know that this Break In and Breakthrough, it's your baby, 250 alums coming up here shortly. How much joy does it give you to see people now 4 years out from those initial first few cohorts take what you have taught them and apply it into their own careers and see their career continue to progress? What type of gratification, joy, what does that provide you?
Well, it gives me exactly what I spoke into the world for myself when I went through COVID, which is when the Break In and Breakthrough genesis was. And that is continually exercising and practicing an attitude of gratitude. I realized back then as a sportscaster, gosh, I bitch and moan a lot behind the scenes about not getting the games I want, not making the money that I want, not having the opportunities that I want. When really what I should be doing is taking a step back and saying, my gosh, I am so thankful that I get to do this for a living. Again, you've probably heard this before. I'm not the first one to say it, but changing one word changes everything. And that word is change it from have to get to. Ernie Johnson says this in almost every speech that he gives. It's not I have to go to work. It's I get to go to work. And COVID really opened my eyes to that. When I was sitting here wondering, am I ever going to call a basketball game again the way that I got used to doing it? Am I ever going to be in a stadium again hosting a show for the Tampa Bay Rays like I had gotten used to doing? And luckily, we're back to that point. But at that point, I realized an attitude of gratitude will win the day, always. So that's the biggest takeaway for me. I continuously now get fed all this feedback from people like yourself and the 200 plus people who've come through the program, whether it's a quick text saying, hey, Rich, just wanted to let you know, I just got this opportunity, hashtag count the wins. Or I see a post on social media of someone getting a new job or starting a next level of education like you did at Syracuse and getting your master's degree and all of these things that are humongous wins. And sometimes you don't even know how big they are when you're in the weeds, because we're all in the weeds. But for me, being on the other side of that and bearing witness to that, it's the most gratifying thing in the world. I don't want to overstate it, but I have three children and I get the same type of gratification out of those interactions as I do watching my children succeed. Because the old adage of you get out of it what you put into it. And I put my heart and soul into this program, into building this community, and it didn't take long, and it continuously comes back to me that what I'm doing counts and is meaningful even if it was only to one or a handful of people, let alone hundreds of people. So gratification is an understatement. It's the one, gratitude is the one word that I would use over and over and over again to describe Breakin' and Breakthrough, as well as the career that I've had to this point.
Well, Rich, I'm certainly grateful for you, not just being here today, but the impact that you've had on my life and my sportscasting journey. So again, we're looking forward to seeing you this upcoming basketball season, all the amazing things that you have coming up with Breakin' and Breakthrough, and we'll certainly be in touch.
Griffin, you're the best. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to this episode. I know it was a little bit on the longer side, but we just had such a great conversation that I had to run the entire thing through. Be on the lookout for more content in the coming days and weeks to follow. Have some pretty cool things coming up here in the pipeline on the GDP podcast. So thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.